easy being green.
Having to spend each day the color of the leaves. When I think it might be nicer being red or yellow or gold or something much more colorful like that. It's not easy.
Good evening, Columbus, and welcome to Youth Beat here on Columbus Community Radio. I'm Lindsay, your host, hoping that your past week was wonderful and that your Monday started this week off right. Whatever the case, I'm glad you've decided to join us this evening. We'll spend the next half hour going green and looking at how people young and old are stepping in to repair the environment. From seasoned professionals to aspiring students, we'll hear about the current procedures in place and the hopes for the future. Every year, around 56,841 young men go on to become Eagle Scouts. This prestigious rank within the Boy Scouting community comes after many, many years of hard work and countless hours of thought and community service, culminating in a time and labor-intensive project of the young man's own creation. It's no surprise, then, that this number counts for only 6% of Boy Scouts worldwide. Eagle Scouts calling for higher intelligence, tenacity, and originality means that the young men who are approved to join them are one of a kind, and certainly worth talking to. Our Upper Arlington team was fortunate enough to know one, and he was kind enough to come take time out for an interview. His values and his remarkable story are highlighted in this week's Positively Charged.
No, I'm positive.
Imagine becoming one of 6% of all Boy Scouts to achieve their Eagle Scout rank. That leaves another 94% of boys who do not achieve them. Many skills and knowledge is needed to achieve this unique ranking. Neil Armstrong, Gerald R. Ford, and Willie Banks, who are all very successful, became Eagle Scouts back when they were just 17 years old. Brad Krause, a junior from Upper Arlington High School, has worked for 10 years in order to become an Eagle Scout. Many of you may not know this, but becoming an Eagle Scout is a huge accomplishment. During Boy Scouts, boys of all ages learn how to survive in the wilderness by acquiring resources from the wilderness. The Boy Scout program is very important to Brad and his family. Another important part of Brad's life is the Upper Arlington Vocal Music Program. Brad and his family have played a very important role in benefiting the program. For Brad's Eagle Scout project, Brad even chose to organize a huge project in order to help the UA Vocal Music Program.
Okay, so basically what I did was we built shelves stacked too high, and we put it on wheels so they could transport it from another warehouse because they were thinking about moving to a different location. And we also made a list and organized it by what musical the props were used in before and what they could be used in the future.
Most people aren't aware of what most scouts have to do to officially become an Eagle Scout. In Boy Scouts, there are several ranks you must achieve in order to become an Eagle Scout, which is the highest rank. They must go through a series of different ranks. You must progress through a series of ranks in order to become an Eagle Scout. Tenderfoot, Second Class, First Class, Star, Life, then finally Eagle. To progress through all of these different rankings takes many years and a lot of hard work.
So basically in the earlier years of Tenderfoot, Second Class, and First Class, it's all about like cooking food, setting up tents, like things around the campsite to help your patrol out. And then later on in like Star, Life, and Eagle, it's more about gaining merit badges and gaining like the amount of Eagle merit badges that you have to progress to the next rank, and also the number of elective or optional ones that you would like to take.
But weren't aware of all the tasks, events, and education needed in order to become an Eagle Scout. There are other Boy Scouts all over the world, just like Brad, that benefit from the advance our communities. It's amazing how just one individual can help so many people.
Forestry. It's... Okay, well, it's a touchy topic. Depending on who you ask, foresters are either drivers of economy, intelligent agriculturalists, protectors of the trees, or those who tear them down. The diverse and often misunderstood nature of their jobs leaves them as the scapegoat for environmental and economic groups alike. We decided to talk to Dr. Williams, a longtime forester and professor at Ohio State University, in order to get the inside information on who foresters are and just what it is they do. I am Lindsay Hirsch here for Youth Beat Radio, here with Dr. Roger Williams of the Ohio State Environment and Natural Resource Department, and he is here to talk with us about some of the work that he does in forestry. So first of all, Dr. Williams, welcome to the show. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And we are going to talk about your work in prescribed burning in southern Ohio. So for those of our listeners who don't know, could you tell us a little about what prescribed burning is?
Well, prescribed burning actually is a intentionally set fire that we put into forests for very specific purposes. And the goals that we have for burning are various, and it depends on the forest and so forth. But it basically is a fire that we put in the forest and we control it. We call it a prescribed burn because just like a doctor provides a prescription for a patient to help them heal, we have a certain type of fire that we wish to put into a forest to help heal the forest or cure the forest of a particular problem that it has. So we call it a prescribed burn. Certainly it doesn't have the large fire, the big flames and so forth that wildfires typically have.
All right, so you were talking about different forms of fire and different reasons for burning. Could you give us just some examples?
Well, first of all, different reasons for burning a forest. We have some forests that have species that require fire to regenerate it. For example, in the Lake States, we have jack pine forests that have serotonous cones. And what a serotonous cone is, basically is a cone that stays closed when it's mature. And heat from the fire allows that cone to open up. Basically, you can think of it like glue. Keeps those cone scales shut. And so it requires heat to open those cone scales. And the seeds in the cone cannot be released until the cone scales open up. And so sometimes we have species that require fire to regenerate. We have some species, such as our oak here in Ohio, that require fire not to regenerate, but require fire in order to keep it in a competitive position in the forest so that it can make it into the overstory and become a large tree. We have some species down in the southern U.S., longleaf pine, that stays in a grass stage. It looks like a tuft of grass, the seedling, and it will not get out of that grass stage for about 12 years or so. And while it is in that grass stage, it becomes very susceptible to competition because it is very small, and it will get brown spot disease because it lays very close to the ground. Fire goes through that system, and we can get it out of that grass stage in about 3 years. So that makes a big difference.
That's actually very interesting. You've been using the word harvest a lot, and I don't know if many of our listeners will understand that forestry is practiced as an agricultural business, and I'm sure a lot of them will be upset when they think about cutting down trees and taking that carbon emission out of the environment. But there are some huge benefits to using wood. Could you elaborate a little on why timber harvest is generally a very good thing?
I like to think of it somewhat compared to a paper towel. And when you have a sheet of a paper towel, when you place it in water, it immediately soaks up that water very quickly. And over time, that water, the amount of water it soaks up, begins to slow down until eventually that paper towel becomes saturated and really does not draw up much water. Forests are sort of like that. They will capture carbon out of the atmosphere at very young ages very quickly. But over time, the rate that they bring carbon in out of the atmosphere slows down, and in some cases slows down quite tremendously, to a point that we, over time, we reach an equilibrium. And so really no more net carbon is being captured from the atmosphere. In harvesting the trees, those trees that we harvest, first of all, have captured carbon out of the atmosphere. We remove those trees from the site and we grow young trees, more young trees in its place. It continues to capture more carbon out of the atmosphere. The wood that is taken out of the forest as a result of cutting the trees, harvesting the trees, are made into a vast array of different products, from lumber to furniture to paper. And all those products have carbon in them that was taken out of the atmosphere. And so that carbon stays sequestered, it stays captured. And while those forests that we've just planted are young forests, they continue to grab more and more carbon out of the atmosphere. Wood, in terms of its construction, and it's used quite extensively in some countries for construction purposes, has a higher insulation factor. We call it an R factor. Has a higher insulation factor than concrete, than plaster, than plastic, than brick, than cement, than concrete blocks. In other words, it does a better job in keeping heat in and also a better job of keeping coolness in when it comes to, you know, if you're air conditioning a facility. In terms of the amount of carbon that's released during its manufacture of the different products, it's very little compared to the amounts of carbon that's released when we produce steel products, when we produce aluminum products, copper or concrete or cement. A lot more carbon is released in the manufacture of those products, and very little carbon is contained within those products. In fact, aluminum is huge in terms of the amount of carbon that's released. It's upwards to 600 times more that's released than what is released when wood products are made.
That's very interesting. I'm quite sure that very few people knew that. Just to wrap this up, I want to bring it back around to the prescribed burnings. I know that a lot of people, again, have a very negative stigma about prescribed burnings. Is there anything that you would like to let any listener know who may be against prescribed burnings? Just a note of caution or anything to sort of help sway them, if you haven't already, in the mind of why prescribed burning is a good thing for forests and not just mercilessly burning forests in a satanic ritual conducted by horrible, horrible people.
Let me just bring it to Ohio and talk about the burning in Ohio. One of the main reasons we conduct prescribed burns in Ohio is because historically we have been losing our oak forests. Oak is a species that requires fire to keep it into a competitive position. The oak forests have missed their natural fire interval here several times. The result has been that the forest composition has been changing, and if it were not for fire, our oak forest would eventually, and quite honestly, pretty much disappear. We have a lot of different wildlife species that really depend upon these oak forests as habitat. So the fire is vitally important. By putting fire into these forests, we can maintain oak in a competitive position to give better assurance that it's going to reach the overstory. And at the same time, the prescribed burning does help recycle a lot of the nutrients that's contained in the understory at a much more rapid rate, so that the trees are able to take advantage of the nutrients and grow faster.
Wonderful. Well, this has been an absolutely delightful interview. Thank you so much for coming to talk to us. Again, I'm Lindsay Hirsch from Youth Beat Radio, interviewing Dr. Roger Williams of the Ohio State University Environment and Natural Resource Department.
And people tend to pass you over because you're not standing out like flashy sparkles in the water or stars in the sky. But green's the color of spring, and green can be cool and friendly like. And green can be big, like a mountain, or important, like a river, or tall like a tree.
I admit, I had fun interviewing Dr. Williams. Aside from being a great professor, he's well-spoken and certainly knows what he's talking about. But it's not just the professors at OSU who have the urge to help the environment. Far from it. The university has a large, active student population devoted to making the world a cleaner, greener place for the next generation. Students for a Sustainable Campus is just one of those organizations. Their president, Lucas McClish, sat down with YouthBeat reporter Nishant Nakhija to shed a little light on what he and the group are doing and why.
And good evening. Welcome to YouthBeat Radio here on 98.3 and 102.1 FM. I'm Nishant Makija. We are here with Lucas McClish, who is the president for Students for a Sustainable Campus here at The Ohio State University. Welcome, Lucas, to YouthBeat Radio. How are you?
Thank you, Nishant. I'm doing really well today. How are you guys?
Good. Thank you for being with us, Lucas. So let's get right into this. Can you tell our listeners about the OSU Students Organization, Students for a Sustainable Campus here at The Ohio State University?
Yeah, I'd love to. So Students for a Sustainable Campus, essentially we focus on making OSU a more green, sustainable campus in general, which sustainability is kind of a buzzword and hot topic at this time. So it's kind of a general statement, and we kind of like to use that in a way that we can focus on essentially whatever environmental issues we want. So I guess kind of the things that we do and things that we get into are local cleanups of the area of campus to make campus more beautiful. We focus on pushing buying local by going to farmers markets or just in general advocacy and education around the area.
Great. And can you give the listeners and some background information about the organization? What is your main purpose? Who is involved in the organization, et cetera? Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Definitely. So our main purpose is essentially to educate and overall through that improve the sustainability of OSU. And then we don't like to focus on just OSU, but the area of Columbus in general. So some of the ways I guess we do that is through some examples of last semester. We did a showing of this movie called Plastic Paradise, which essentially focuses on the plastic consumption of the U.S. and how we are so addicted to the use of plastic, and kind of views that in a holistic perspective and how that came about and goals and steps we do to preventing that. Other than that, we've done local things like rain garden plantings, which rain gardens take the runoff from roofs, and they, instead of diverting it to the storm drains, which it then runs straight into the rivers and often picks up pollutants like heavy metals and trash and things like that, instead converts it into gardens where it in turn waters the gardens. The gardens purify the water and then let it slowly release into the systems. So those are just some basic, I guess, events and things we've done in the past year.
Some great things that you guys have done this year. And what activities is the organization involved with this year?
So this year, our main goal for this next semester is going to be focusing on plastic bags. We believe that they are kind of pointless, honestly, and there's much better alternatives such as reusable bags, which are more durable. You can reuse them. They're not just one use. You can take them with you. So we believe that it's just a non-essential and that we should work towards at least getting some sort of legislation to have them reduced. So our main goal with that is to get a petition going, which will in turn call for a tax on plastic bags. Because we believe that a tax makes more sense rather than going for an all-out ban, since it will kind of show people incentive, look, you are saving this much money by bringing your own bags to the store, kind of promoting the use of good habits. And then through that, hopefully in the future, it will in turn turn into a bag tax or a bag ban, sorry.
Just clarification, we're talking about paper and plastic bags, or are we only talking about plastic bags?
So essentially it's focusing more on plastic bags, but overall single-use bags in general, that's a good question, we think are just as bad because the research shows that each one is almost equally energy intensive. And if you're going by energy and resources, plastic bags are almost better in that aspect, which is interesting. But plastic bags actually stick around in the environment longer. They can blow away in the wind. They pollute our oceans, our waterways, and there's honestly just not a lot of good things for them.
Once again, that was Nishant Makija interviewing Lucas McClish, president of Students for a Sustainable Campus at Ohio State University. I'm Lindsay Hirsch, here for YouthBeat. Now, we're getting pretty close to the end of the show, but I think we still have time for a creature feature. This week's featured creature is the red-tailed hawk. Found just about everywhere in North America, save for the farthest reaches of Canada, don't let the commonality of these raptors fool you. They're remarkable flyers and sharp-eyed adversaries. They preferred to hunt in open fields, where it's easy to spot mice, rabbits, and other suitable prey running to and fro. As such, farm fields, railroads, and highways make for optimal hunting ground, and they thrive around humans. With a 40-inch wingspan and bright copper-colored tails, these creatures are hard to miss and are breathtaking to see. But what is truly awe-inspiring is their mating rituals. Full of high circles, steep dives, and incredible agility, the courting displays culminate in the male and female locking talons and cartwheeling through the sky. As you can imagine, such displays are impressive and energy-consuming, which may explain why red-tailed hawks are monogamous and sometimes mate for life. And that leaves us with just enough time for a final quote. Tonight, we'll pull from the innovator and tycoon Steve Jobs, who said, "Have the courage to follow your heart and intuition. They somehow know what you truly want to become." For Youth Beat Radio, this is Lindsay. Good night.